clearly you're very open to questions and other thoughts. What reactions you guys have? What strikes?
Don't move. Never move when it's first player to discuss.
I don't know what order you want to do.
Let's do questions first while people are excited about it, and then you can integrate your questions into the discussion. I think that's, if you don't mind.
That's fine. That'd be very good.
Okay, let's start simply once around the room here.
So, Galit. Definitely this is fascinating in lots of, you know, ways of thinking. I mean, I feel like, you know, we academics are kind of trying to rush and kind of capture what's really happening. So the question is, this is all, you know, new and interesting and exciting, and, you know, probably like you said, our kids know about it more than we do at this point. But where do you see the analysis coming in? Where are the statistical analysis, you know, data mining, whatever? Where are those going? Are we still trying to reverse engineer the systems and not having Amazon data, trying to understand how they create those positions, where are the analysts and the, you know, where the research should be going?
The underlying structure which I had hoped to have here is that we moved from analysis and data mining, which you guys know to do very well, to thinking about experiments, which is unfortunately somewhat already out of the realm of pure academia. And I gave, when I talked here a year or 2 years ago, I gave the experiment on the left-hand side of shopping cart on the right-hand side, and that makes 1.5% difference. So doing experiments is the next one. Then I moved to user-created content, which is yet another dimension beyond just doing data analysis. Yes, what's interesting is potentially to analyze the social networks there. But why do we analyze things? I think that is the key question. Why do we do what we do? What can we actually change by doing this? And in the case here of people trusting each other one direction and not trusting each other the other direction, that gives us insights in order to who to present if you want to discover new people. So there is this button on some dating sites. Show me more like him. Well, which aspect is it about him which I like? Is it his glasses? Is it his age? Is it the city? Is it, what is it? And then at the end, I talked about trying to discover sort of the underlying behavior economics aspects of it. So data mining is, unfortunately, I think, something which we can do well if we get some offline data or if we screen scrape. But is not all that useful for creating new stuff. So that was my own little notes here on the board for the talk, that I wanted to take you from data mining and statistical issues somewhere.
But I'm just coming from a discipline in marketing where a lot of these things coexist. What you'll often find towards discovery is you're moving to new methods. I was thinking you may have a new term like e-ethnography or things like that, where you're trying to really discover what's going on. But it does fold back into actual purchase behavior and all sorts of those activities. So you can think of it as like a continuum of methods from, you know, what they're actually doing and looking at that and uncovering it off to, you know, trying to live in their lives. But if you discover things, that should also come back and be patterns that firms will observe, and that should relate to experiments that firms can do. So you can kind of close the loop by whatever is discovered as you move off further down that list. It should also be showing back up in the data, and therefore people using all these tools and techniques should find out if that's true and very quickly be able to see that those kinds of discoveries and actions consistent with it will fit. I don't know if that's
totally, I totally agree.
That can fit together really well.
When I do this left side, right side, when I did this here a couple of years ago, I said actually none of you should have raised your hand which you think is better, but we should have asked, what is the behavior which we are trying to drive? What are the objective functions? It's similar to, you know, machine learning, that you need to figure out first what is the objective you're trying to reach. And marketing certainly is, I think, very much closer to what the company tries to do, particularly now in much more performance-based advertising. 2/3 of all advertising dollars spent are now spent on performance-based advertising, not just online, but online and offline, as somebody told me from Turn. Yes.
I'll comment on that question. For web 2.0, where it's experimentation, participation, and interaction, as with the presentation we heard a moment ago, one has to think about the process of the participation and interaction that generated the data to understand what the properties of the data are going to be. So increasingly, we've been interested in a number of things, one of which is a dual process of service delivery where there's a human interface and then an automated interface, and people move back and forth between it. As they do, you're collecting data. How do you analyze that data? What are the processes of that data that you get? And then second issue is for the taxonomy that you covered. If you have a database which is building, such as Wikipedia, or if somebody has a wiki where they're doing a project with a number of people dispersed throughout the world, and they're adding things to it, some of whom you know, some of whom you don't know, issues about, firstly, how do you categorize that data? How do you analyze how it's growing, the pace of growth, the nature of growth, the diversity of information in it, and then what are the disciplining mechanisms that cause people to try to put good information on it? It's surprised that the issue in science indicated that the Wikipedia really has accuracy as good in most cases for most of the trials that they ran and experiments as the online Encyclopedia Britannica, which was which left that business a little bit disappointed. So how do you analyze that kind of amorphous data, and how do you really, if you're using it, how do you know which part is accurate? It turns out most of it so far, for reasons we may not completely understand, is fairly accurate. Then a second data issue, the third data issue that comes into place is when you're explicitly sharing private information with other parties, such as in a supply chain where you choose to make available, you may choose to make open your database to your partner downstream or upstream in the supply chain or parts of it. But you have security precautions which give them access to portions of your database and not all of your database. What are the properties of the actions of the downstream partner who then relies on your information to make their decisions? You have to keep in mind that the action that they make, such as pricing decisions or other supply chain decisions by retailers, are going to be conditioned on information that they've received from upstream partner, but only perhaps a portion of that information. So you have to think through an analysis of data where you have to say, well, this data is this kind of data, but it's also tagged as security open as opposed to security closed, and choose to analyze. So there are a whole set of issues about data to analyze. So there are at least a number of areas where the data process is influenced, generating process is influenced by either the service involved, the environment, or the data, a wiki environment, or security shared information environment.
I'm late at that. Different question. You talk, it seems like you see the Web 2.0 and 3.0 become more and more information open, in a sense. I mean, more and more people are willing to give up information and post it online. On the other hand, I guess you see more and more government activities in concerns about privacy. Google, for instance, China, for example, China. How do you see that kind of that balance, some kind of interaction play out?
I think the question which we should think about is really the question of data co-ownership. I don't know what the NSA is doing and stuff like that, so I just have no idea. And with Yahoo and China, the general view I have is that if a company decides to go into a country, then there are legal implications, you have laws you have to abide by. And I'm not a lawyer. That's very, very far away from my expertise. But the question of, you are helping Google to improve its search algorithms by showing on which of the results Google is returning you are clicking. You are helping Amazon.com with its recommendation algorithms by first providing data on people click, also click, but then secondly also on the meta estimation of parameters, whether this model or that model is a better model. So I think just as, and that's why I end with the economic model of the interaction, just as we, I believe, see it coming there, that people are microcharging for services they provide, I think people will be expecting more than free ads, which are relevant in terms of search terms they enter. And by the way, what we're talking about relevant here, on, for instance, AdSense, the click-through probability is less than 0.1%. That means out of 1,000 ads, 999 are not relevant. So we still have a very long way to go to actually really have a value in those ads which Google is displaying for us in exchange to the attention which we are giving it.
But will consumers ever become less willing to give information? I mean, at the moment seems to me like they are, most models are based on them becoming more and more. I mean, then Friendster and MySpace. Will there ever be, or what if there will ever be a reverse or some kind of change of
I think people like to share. If you give them an environment which is not overly restrictive. Why is Friendster dying and MySpace blossoming? Friendster was too restrictive in saying these are the fields you can fill in. MySpace, hey, do whatever you want. If you're in dark pink or light pink, be my guest. Nobody can read it, but you feel you're expressing yourself and great.
If I could comment on that, I couldn't agree more. There's one domain where people are willing to share but within limits, which is in emails. So spam is a significant problem. Permission marketing is a great vehicle for firms and a great vehicle for consumers who want to participate in permission marketing, but consumers are much more leery about allowing themselves to be on a permission marketing list. And so there is an area, and increasingly spam is going to become an increasingly large problem because the technological solutions are only a partial answer. The question are there economic solutions to spam and other solutions? But that is an area where people they want to be open, and it really efficient. It's for people in the marketing in this group. It's a really interesting, permission marketing is a really fascinating way to reach people. It's not too costless, except the cost is downloaded to the consumer, who then might want to avoid it.
Are sort of on the outside the fence. They don't have access. Now in other domains, I mean, people have had that problem and they have come to some agreement to solve it. For example, if you look at financial domain, many business schools now have a small amount of money where they allow the students and faculty to invest it, or at least mock it up and play with real stock market or other markets and see how their strategies behave. I mean, do you ever see that happening in e-commerce? I mean, do you see some industry coming to agreements with some universities to allow them to do some controlled experiments?
experiments are so much at the central fabric of companies like Amazon.com that it's not about doing controlled experiments. I mean, when I was at Amazon, I sent for some traffic to Dan Ariely at MIT so he could do some experiments. But that's what we're talking right now. We're talking really that this experimental nature is so much at the core strategy of what those companies do that unfortunately, the philosophy is very different from one, let's do some experiments to find out how things work. Just saying, we throw out lots of stuff all the time. As I said, in Flickr's case, you know, every half hour a new software release. And then we just measure what works, and we just adopt this. So it's really in the inner loop, if you will, if you think about Fortran programming or something. It's really in the inner loop where the experiment sits, as opposed to somewhere attached on the outside.
But don't they worry about the history? Look at, again, stock market kind of world. Early 1900, people had the same mentality. They will go do technical analysis, find some silly pattern here and there, and go and put in money. And then you had the big crash of equities. And that forced people to start doing science, right? Today, you're not going to, you know, just go and do experiments and do things. Right? There is a much better science of how financial instruments behave. We already have had one bubble first in e-commerce. Doesn't Amazon.com worry that they are going to run into the same thing unless there is a good science and understanding of what's going on?
I think that one thing actually also want to say to some of the questions before, what is very important is that companies work hard, and most of them don't work hard enough, to be clear on what it means to do well. Just the fact that the flood brings in a couple of cool articles in response to some search means nothing at all. Looking at, that's right, I remember, the Wikipedia versus Encyclopedia Britannica example, having some human look at 10 keywords and looking up what does this source, what does that source say, is not enough. Finance people are super good in running back testing and in cleaning data. I mean, companies like D.E. Shaw spend so much money on their testing infrastructure and on the data cleaning infrastructure compared to on their model building effort. So I think what we can do is to really help getting the methodology of evaluation clean and crisp. And it's just tiring for me to see companies again and again coming up with some anecdotes, which is precisely what we saw 100 years ago in finance, of, well, if the head and shoulder pattern is this way, then we'll do that. So if you get the metrics clear and then just measure whatever you do, how it affects the metrics, then that's the best you can do. The hard part is to capture long-term effects. It's very easy to capture short-term effects. And one of the statistical, seriously difficult problems is to come up in a non-stationary environment. Everything changes all the time. What will be the long-term effect, for instance, of, say, Amazon.com showing sponsored links? So how often do you need to show to somebody that if they go to shopping.com, they'll probably find better pants than if they try to find those pants at Amazon, until they don't go to Amazon.com at the beginning anymore? And as I said, this, on the other hand, being confounded with people using search engines more and more as the entry point into virtually everything, makes long-term effect modeling very, very difficult. So if you feel like finding a good hard problem, then it's really, what is the long-term effect of doing this versus that? The short-term effect you can measure. We don't need statisticians anymore to measure if you have 1 million clicks in a day. 1 over square root of 1 million is 0.1%. So we don't need to be smart to do those models. But what's happening with this if it happens 10 times? Are these people going to leave then? So right-sensor distribution, left-sensor. These are the interesting things, the hard statistical problems, I think, in e-commerce. Mike.
So So I was intrigued by the interplay between the long tail and Web 2.0. So the notion that the long tail suggests that customer preferences are much more heterogeneous than would be reflected in a brick and mortar world. How much of the long tail do you think is driven by, I just always liked British ska music and now I can find it and actually buy it, versus Web 2.0 technologies allow me to discover products that I wouldn't have otherwise known about? That is, how much of the long tail is driven by Web 2.0 versus just latent in customer demand generally? Question makes sense?
Question makes total sense. Of course, don't know the answer. I mean, you know Eric and Jeffrey who study on, they trying to, yeah, you too, but there was something which was quoted in Wired magazine afterwards. So that's, I think, the best state of the art which, you know, has happened there.
Right.
In the information long tail, as opposed to the product long tail, I think there really people discover stuff they didn't know existed.
Do you have a good example of that?
If you sort of immerse yourself for a night into the world of blogs, you'll probably find yourself drawn into things and discovering things you never know would exist, sort of the serendipity to discover things. So, I mean, I think we all have personal examples. For me, the first time this happened was in 86 when I was at Stanford and discovered newsgroups. Wow, you know, what people talk about here, that's just amazing. And I think that's another long tail example. But just not really well supported discovery. It's just that, you know, you sit in Sweet Hall and, you know, log on for the first time and say, it's just amazing what Stanford Hall has. So I think if you do information discovery, it's just people are curious. Who of you knows Hot or Not? The site hotornot.com. So I personally have just no clue what makes 20 million clicks a day. I think University of Minnesota is taking care of its students very well.
No finer way to end you guys. Can we say thank you? Please, all right. Why don't we just take a 10-minute break and then we'll restart with everything. If you've got individual questions, come up and say hi. And thank you, man.
Thank you.
Just wonderful.
It was a great opportunity to be here. Thanks.